Welcome to Scenes, conversations in culture with the people who know it best. We chat with guests across music, art, fashion, film, sport and technology in a bid to understand the scenes we love that little bit better. I'm your host Lenny, and in this episode I am joined by the unparalleled Douglas Dare. I laughed so hard during our catch-up that I genuinely think one of the mics might have blown, which is the excuse I'm using as to why the audio sounds a tad off. We touched on drag culture, its evolution, what the art form means to Douglas, his music career, the importance of being silly, and the impact of his Dorset upbringing. One last thing before we jump in. I'd just like to mention that this episode was recorded in July, just after the Platinum Jubilee and before the news of the Queen's passing. Good afternoon, Douglas. How are you?
Good afternoon, Lenny. I'm very well.
Good. Thank you for inviting me into your lovely home at an undisclosed location. I can't be giving that information away.
I'm actually thinking about making a P.O. box.
Oh.
Yeah, because people want to send me stuff.
So you do get unsolicited mail through the post quite regularly, do you?
No, I get requests to give me mail. People want to send me mail and they say, where can I send it?
Oh, I see.
And I can't give them my address.
I think a P.O. box sounds like a really good idea.
Yeah, it's you have a minimum of 3 months. I've researched this, and it's £54.99 a month. So that's quite an investment. So unless people are sending me 55 quid worth of stuff that I can block, I can't afford a P.O. box.
That's yeah. So yeah, maybe you need to ask them what they're willing to send before committing to the box. So.
Yeah, that's my next step.
Well, we'll kick things off as we usually do. Can you tell us the first thing you fell in love with and the impact it has had on you later in life?
Well, I actually was listening to the podcast you did with Alice. And the first thing she said was that she grew up on a farm, which is exactly the same as me. But my the thing I fell in love with is kind of completely the opposite, I realised. She was saying how, you know, growing up on a farm with all the animals and the nature and... You know, I think I just took that for granted, actually, when I was growing up. As much as I loved it, as I thought it was beautiful, it was all I knew. I think I realised the thing I fell in love with first was anything that was the opposite of the sort of, like, the shit spread sort of, like, driveways and the cow pats and anything that was like that. And so I would find anything that had any glamour. I think I realised that the thing I fell in love with was periodically my family, so my mother, my father, my brother, my cousin, and any other sort of wayward that had like come and stayed on the farm at that point during my childhood. When we went to a wedding or like at some kind of event where everyone had to get smartened up, and I adored that. Like, or if it was my birthday, like when I was 5 years old, I wanted to go to a restaurant for my birthday, and I wanted to see mum and dad like dress up,
yeah,
and, like, brush their hair, and like, I know it sounds crazy, but like, I remember, you know, my mother's because we were, you know, wearing wellies, you know, boiler suits and everything. I mean, you know, it's cute, it's whatever, but any opportunity to dress up and see my mother's dresses. And I just used to watch my mum and dad, like, doing their hair in the mirror, like, brushing it and getting it, and then we'd go into the car. We'd even have to put plastic over the seats in the car, over the Land Rover seats, so we wouldn't get all the mud on us. And that was I fell in love with that, like, the idea of getting dressed up and going somewhere that wasn't the reality of the farm, you know? So I, you know, nowadays I love going back to the farm. But yeah, I think that was the first thing I fell in love with. Just like any opportunity for glamour. And what I would see on TV, even if it was a moment of glamour in films. Anything that would allow me to escape, I think. And you said, what impact?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's pretty obvious.
I think so.
I think, you know, to my father's disappointment, he even said to me a couple weeks ago when I saw him, He said, you know, you should be doing this on the farm. He said, you should be doing this. You should be mucking out these cows. That's where, you know, you should be doing all this. Not gallivanting up in London, all of that. And I said, well, you know, I'm sorry. This is just, that's where I always wanted to be. I wanted to go to the city. I wanted to be a performer in any capacity that allowed me to take the wellies off and either put heels on or something similar.
Well, that leads us on nicely to my next question. So you're obviously an incredibly accomplished musician, but it's your drag artistry that I'd love to touch on first. So what does drag culture mean to you?
Drag for me is an opportunity to kind of regress to being a child and a reminder of how ridiculous the world is, and to poke fun at everything. To poke fun at gender, mainly. To poke fun at the way we look, the way we dress, the way we speak. And to, yeah, just to remind myself that we should be silly. I think it's something that, with my music, I became very serious. And I'm proud of my music, and I like that vein. But, you know, that vein of expression, which is more melancholy, more considered, more serious. But I actually felt like I'm a silly person, and I needed that outlet, you know. And also I needed that glamour, you know, I suppose. I wanted that. It was the epitome of all of that. So to me, it's an escape, but also an escape into, like, my truth. It's not like I'm not escaping something that I don't want to be. I'm actually escaping into where I would like to be. I'm so glad that I did it when I was very young. I was doing it as a child, like lots of kids do, I suppose. Yeah. But I did it maybe a bit more than some kids did. I did a lot of performances for my parents with the towel around my head and dance routines and all this sort of stuff. And that's why I loved that and needed to do it, and I'm glad I still do it. But what do I think of drag culture? Well, that's really evolved especially over the last 10 years. When I started doing drag, and I did it for the first time as a young adult in Liverpool, where we went to university, and that was before anyone else was doing it at a young age. Like, now loads of kids are doing it, and that's fantastic, in part to it being on mainstream television, and in part I think because the conversation around gender identity is so much more at the fore now, where young people can now express themselves a bit more freely. So I think we're seeing younger people doing drag more. So the drag culture has now become it's gone into the mainstream. And people think it's cool now. I think there was definitely a time when I was younger where it definitely wasn't cool. Definitely wasn't like hot to do it. Like, it wasn't like something that I would do to pick up guys. You know, like when I was doing it when I was 20. But now, I'm beating them off with a stick, really. That culture's really changed.
Yeah.
For that reason. But I mean, there's so much to explore in that. So if you want me to delve into something more specific.
Yeah, well, so I suppose the reason I asked what your thoughts were first, because my second question was actually about the rise of drag in popular culture due to mainstream TV shows, which shan't be mentioned. So I wondered how that had changed, and also whether misconceptions had arisen. I think your explanation of what it meant to you is really powerful, makes a lot of sense to me. And I've got a feeling that probably that it's not actually the same for everyone.
No, there'll definitely be, there's a huge contingent of queens now, and kings and all in between, that will want to be a drag performer for fame. You know, just the same as there were people who went on Pop Idol, The X Factor or The Voice. It's become a viable career now, where, you know, I think people who did drag RuPaul's Drag Race were doing it for, you know, either a gender expression or because they just loved it so much they had to be doing it. But now it's there's another avenue there. And part of me kind of, maybe a few years ago, started to resent that a bit. Because, you know, there's always that sense. It's a bit like when you've heard an artist before anyone else and suddenly everyone loves it.
Mm.
You know, it's like, well, I heard them first. Well, I like them first. I'm a seminal fan here. But now I just feel really glad that it's become so mainstream and that it is that everyone can do it. You know, that ultimately, that's a really good thing.
And have you seen that more opportunities open up for you in terms of performing?
Yeah, definitely. When I initially did it, it was just that gender expression thing that I wanted to do. And then just through coincidence, people saw me around, just being at an event, and asked me to perform at something. And this is, you know, maybe like 7 years ago, maybe 8 years ago, before it had really taken off into what we know it to be like right now.
Mm.
And so it really organically grew, and I just started to perform. And then suddenly dedicated clubs started opening in London for drag. That had never happened before. And there's work for everyone. You know, there's a lot's going around. I mean, the Jubilee, which has just happened, I made a shit ton of money. It was great, you know, because it wasn't a time that I was going to be out gigging, doing my music stuff. And I love that kind of just that suddenly this hobby that I had, people want to pay me for it. And because most queens now are what we call look queens, i.e. they put the wig on, they put the outfit on, and they can take pictures and put it on Instagram. There's a lot of them are like this, but because I can sing and because I can hold a mic and speak to an audience, that is seen as like people think it's amazing.
Mm.
Suddenly that, whereas to me, that's always what a drag performer has been, you know. But apparently, it's quite lucrative.
Wow. And I suppose thinking about it, you know, even 10 years ago with the Golden Jubilee, that kind of lucrative opportunity wouldn't have been possible, would it?
No, I'm sure there were some queens doing something, but I mean, they had the pageant, you know, on the mall and on the mall, and there was a whole flood for the queens, you know, at one point, you know, and I was just like, this is great, you know.
Yeah.
And there's been an idea going around that drag, because it's inherently underground, and so that whilst it's having its time in the mainstream, there's a big thought that it will go back underground. Things are cyclical like that.
Mm.
Supposedly, I don't know. I used to think that would definitely happen, that it would have its moment, it will go back under, because it needs to be. Well, I say this, and maybe this is an old thought of mine, maybe I need to rethink this, but I've always had thought that drag needs to be politically incorrect, and it needs to be against the grain.
Mm.
It needs to be, like I said, it's reminding myself not to take all of this so seriously. If suddenly drag is all encompassing and everywhere, and it doesn't have that kind of that opposing feel to the mainstream, maybe I always thought it would lose something.
Mm.
lose its potency. But maybe that's not true. Maybe I have to learn to be like, no, well, it's here to stay now, and then it'll be a much wider gamut of drag. Some will be, you know, drag queens hosting Strictly Come Dancing, like in a very serious way, and there'll be other drag queens who are eating their own shit and baking, which, you know, I have seen.
I was going to ask, but you kind of answered it. You know, whether that, because you were going to lose that opposing nature, whether performances would become more extreme. But it sounds like we're already there. If there's shit eating going on,
no, that's that's always been there. I didn't know it, but there's always an underground sort of scene. But I suppose because there is so much opportunity for drag performance, these underground performances are more viable as well. There's more audience, and I mean, I really hope it wasn't their actual feces. But it came out of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
With it becoming more politically correct, there is opportunity for these slightly more zany, still maybe un-PC acts to then find their way into the mainstream.
I've definitely feel that I've there's the scenes in drag have really spread out. They've kind of fanned out, and for a while there was a moment where the East London queens and kings, I shouldn't just say queens because there's a huge contingent of kings as well, kind of, you had to be very alternative suddenly. If you wanted to be in East London, you had to be more alternative, because we were separating ourselves from the mainstream Soho queens, you know, for example.
Yeah.
And it was almost a bit like, oh, that whole kind of you can't sit with us kind of vibe, and kind of like showing that we're different. And that never sat well with me. And I think over the years now, it started, people have been like, oh, okay, you're doing that, you're doing this. We're all... I think it was the reaction to it becoming so popular. Suddenly it was like some people had to mark themselves out as being an OG, some different alternative, not something you're going to see on the TV. So yeah, it's, but I think to my eyes now, it's kind of, it's started to level out a bit now, and people are just embracing it, you know, whatever you're doing, wherever you're doing it, and yeah, being happy that some of our brothers and sisters are now raking it in.
Completely.
You know? Yeah, making a, not more than a viable business, they're making a real sort of like credible business.
Yeah, you know? I'd love to move on to your creative process, and this is something that's, you know, completely new to me, so I might have missed something off here, I might be way off the mark, but I'm just thinking in terms of makeup, attire, character, how you get yourself in that mindset.
Well, of course, I mean, the obvious thing is the makeup and the costuming, and that it takes time, and there's a physical process with that.
Yeah.
And I personally actually love putting other people in drag, especially straight men. That's really good fun, because then you actually get to witness the transformation in its sort of purest form. You know, I explain what I do. You know, you shave your body from head to toe. I mean, this is what I do. Some queens want to be hairy, you know, yeah, whatever. It's all different things can apply. But, you know, you're shaving, I'm putting in contact lenses to change the colour of my eyes, I'm taping my face back, like, you know, I'm usually using, like, I use, like, what people, like, you know, in old Hollywood used to use, the facelift tapes, you know, you put,
yeah,
put a tape either side of your eyes, and you're yanking that back, some above your eyebrows, you're yanking that back, then you're getting some sort of duct tape, you know, you... This is just the head at this point. And then you glue your eyebrows down, or some queens shave them off completely. And then it's, you know, I could paint my face in 45 minutes, but I like to take about 3 hours for the whole process. I like to luxuriate in the process. I have a playlist I put on with like some sort of 70s disco tunes. And I wear a robe, I wear a silk robe, I want to feel the fantasy, I often have a glass of bubbles or something.
Yeah.
Or a line of coke.
Really get into character.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, it's two hours painting your face, and then, you know, you're physically, you know, you're binding yourself, like you're putting a corset on and tucking your dick away. If you want to do that, I know some queens who actually like pad their dick. They want to go the opposite.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's all there. But no, I like doing the, I guess it's old school now, like, you know, just, you know, the female illusion side of stuff, which isn't what lots of queens do, but, you know, so that's the physical thing. And you actually, you feel different. You carry yourself different than you put on the heels and the wig. And still every time I get in drag, it's like, I feel like the child in me couldn't be more excited. It's just like, wow, you get to do this. Because especially, I feel especially as a boy who, when growing up, even though I did perform for my parents in the living room, you know, with a towel on my head and stuff, it was never celebrated for me to be that way. in actual fact, you know, I know that my father didn't want me to do that. I, for most of my childhood, I'd existed in a pink tutu and a little, you know, crop top. And I loved that until I was old enough to realise that my dad didn't want that, you know. And so every time I get to go get up into the drag, I look at myself and I go, I'm a fucking sexy bitch. I look amazing. You know, just the other day, for the first time in my life, I managed to, I converted one of the cupboards in the hallway in my house here into a dedicated drag wardrobe, which I've never gotten to do before. Because I moved some stuff around, made some space. I was like, you know what? Because I've had my stuff in suitcases and, you know, wigs here and all that stuff. And now I've got, literally can hang all these dresses up. And I said to myself, I said it to everyone. I even tweeted it. I was just like, the little boy in me is so happy that I have got a wardrobe. I can open it up and I've got my dresses and the sparkles and all of this. It's just like, this is, you know, like a child. So anyway, the whole process is really transformative and then just like really rewarding. Then as soon as that wears off, you've got like the pain. It is agony, Lenny, let me tell you, it's so painful. It's honestly, it's so painful. And it's like, you just have to ignore it.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like the heels, the dick up, the balls, you know what I mean? Just the corset and all the tape. Honestly, you feel like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
And the moment I feel this is the moment I get in the Uber and I'm crocked my head over to one side because I can't, and my wig is too tall to actually fit in there. It's hot. I can't open the window because it's going to blow my lashes off.
Mm.
And all this stuff. And you just go, and you're sat there, crippled. And you think, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
But then you just, then I just think to myself, this is ridiculous. And that's why I love it. It's so ridiculous. But you know, when you put someone else in drag who hasn't done it before, especially, and I say straight man especially because you get to really witness that kind of contrast, because lots of queens, including myself, you know, essentially we're in drag every day, you know, anyway, you know, we're all being feminine, flamboyant. Mm. And you put certain people in drag and you just see their physicality change, you know. But it can really vary how people react. Some guys you put in, they become more butch. They start to walk with their legs, yeah, apart, their shoulders become sort of higher up and they kind of start to walk like a footballer or rugby player. Can't do sport analogies. you know, that. But sometimes they really feel the fantasy. And, you know, there are straight male drag queens in the world. And there are people who play with gender expression. You know, Grayson Perry, for example, who isn't a drag queen, they're an artist, but they use quote-unquote female clothes or feminine clothes, you know, to express their work, you know. So I find that really fascinating as well. But I started with the name Lunar Landing, which I think is cute, but that was the problem with it. It was kind of too cute for the kind of person I was.
Okay.
Drag. You know, Lunar Landing kind of had this, she sounded kind of like too ethereal, you know, literally. and to me, I wasn't that. I was more cutting, more kind of like, yeah, more ground, more earthy, more like a bit rougher. And also a bit more just, and a bit more politically incorrect. So I changed my name to Visa Reasons initially, because when my dad got remarried, his wife is from the Philippines, and he quite honestly said to me years ago, they were going to get married. And I said to him, Dad, you are getting married for love reasons, aren't you? Because I was just worried for a second, you know, because, and he jokingly said, no, of course not, but Visa Reasons. And I was immediately like, that's the name, Visa Reasons. But then after a time, I just preferred just being called Visa, because it's, I just preferred that. But I quite like the idea of Wanda Lotto.
Okay,
I'm,
yeah.
My personal favourite at the moment is Shirley Knott. I really like Shirley Knott. And there's another one. I've got a whole list, honestly.
Oh, really?
I've got a whole list that of my key. Because I think drag names are fun to come up with. Wanda Lotto would be someone who was sort of like covered with loads of cheap jewellery. Sort of like just covered all the time and just sort of like, and also be really rough speaking. All of this. And Shirley Knott. I think Shirley Knott would be from the West Country, actually. Shirley Knott.
Oh, yeah.
She used to be really slow like that. And she would be brilliant. I'd really like that. Oh, Shirley. yeah, so I would like that. But, yeah, so to me, I would change my character, you know, again. But there are queens out there, going back to those queens that are trying to make a career out of this, who are trying to brand themselves. You know, they're choosing a name and that's they're going to stick to it and they're going to brand themselves and that's going to be a career choice for them. For me, I've been able to, with drag, I've been offered like certain opportunities. I've been asked to audition for RuPaul's Drag Race and other drag TV programs. I'm not interested in that at the moment. Maybe never. My instinct right now is I don't think I'll ever be interested in that, but never say never. But, you know, for me, music is my number one passion. It is where I see myself, like, putting most of my energy and time. And also because when I did start to do drag more, it lost a bit of the excitement I had. You know, there were times where I was getting in drag and I wasn't getting that feeling of, oh, the child in me. I was thinking, oh, God, just the bull's in me. That's what I was thinking. You know, it was not fun. And I was like, why am I doing this? And so I actually, more recently, haven't been doing as much drag. I've been just cherry-picking what I want to do.
Yeah.
And saying, okay, yes, I'll do this. Yes, I'll do that Jubilee party. I mean, the one I did last week, I was emceeing a pet parade. So people had submitted their dogs and their cats. I mean, it was ludicrous. And I thought, what the hell am I doing? This is unbelievable. And I was there with a microphone, 700 people lining this street, dogs wearing bloody tiaras, you know. And I was, you know, on the mic reading the, you know, roasting the owners, pretty much, actually. And it was hilarious, and I just thought this is so stupid, and that's why I love it.
And that's why you love it, yeah.
But there were some times where I was doing it like two or three times a week, and I wasn't enjoying it. And I thought I don't need to do this. There are, you know, so I can just do it when I want to do it, and you know, and keep it as like a passion project. Mm. This makes me feel good. Hopefully, other people feel good as well.
So you mentioned there that music at the moment is at the forefront of everything you do. I just wondered how those two things fit together for you and whether you find that they're a creative parallels or whether they influence one another or whether you're able to just completely remove yourself from one to be in the other.
Yeah, it's interesting because people, since I started doing drag, immediately asked, are you going to combine the two, the music career and the drag career? To which my answer was always, no, I love keeping them separate.
Mm.
I really liked the parallel. I love that contrast of my music, which, as I said before, is more serious. It's like, I always liken it to an artist painting with certain colours of their palette. You know, I like painting with music with the darker colours of the palette. And I like painting with drag, the brighter colours of the palette. And to be honest, that's one thing and that's the other. However, that's how I felt initially. And I think there was some internalised homophobia, dragophobia, I've never said that word. Some kind of like reluctance for me to show femininity in my music because I wanted people to see it serious, take me seriously, and for it to feel credible, you know. And to me, that didn't mean like doing like drag in that. However, with my most recent album called Milk Teeth, which is about memories of childhood, a big part of it was reconnecting with my childhood, and a big realization was how much I used to dress up in that time of my life and play characters. And so when it came to doing the album artwork and when it came to taking it on the road and going on tour, I knew I wanted to wear some kind of flamboyant androgynous costume, and I'd never wanted to do that before those albums. I was just wearing jeans and a t-shirt and, you know, no makeup. But yeah, with this, I suddenly thought, no, I need to remind myself what I used to love doing and dressing up as part of that. I didn't want to do drag for the album, also because drag, it immediately connotates something else. It immediately makes that the focus. I want the music to remain the focus, but I wanted to sort of express more femininity and gender nonconformity and more a fluid side of myself. So over the years, they are starting to merge. And I think I have had someone ask if I will make an album in drag, and we will want to do like a disco album.
Okay.
And do you know what? I would love to do that. That sounds really fun. But I still feel like I've got something to say with Douglas Dare before I want to start making albums with Visa. So yeah, who knows what will become up. But I think there is possibility for the collision of these universes.
Yeah.
Also.
And you mentioned Milk Teeth there, which is your latest record. And as you said, it's about your childhood. And I wondered why now? Why were you ready now to take that journey back and reminisce and write about, you know, your time back in Dorset?
Yeah, back in Dorset. Well, when I was at university, when I first started writing songs, I was 18, I remember thinking distinctly, I was surrounded by songwriters. And whilst I played the piano and had done for years, I'd never written any songs, not really. While some people there had been writing since they were 15, even earlier, you know. And I was amazed by them and so inspired by them that I wanted to start writing songs. But when I did, I didn't feel like I had the life experience or the... Yeah, I didn't feel like I didn't know what to write about, essentially.
Mm.
And so with the first album, all the songs that I wrote are stories. They're other people's stories. And obviously seen through my eyes and it was just, that's what I felt like I had to do. And with the first album, I'd never written lyrics before, so I challenged myself to write poetry. I wanted the words to work on the page first and all this, and it felt, it was very thought out, you know, very considered. And the same with the second album, I started to mix something that just happened to me, which was a breakup, like an obvious thing to write an album about.
Mm.
And other stories about that. It was like I went through an experience where it was like my boyfriend at the time had led a double life, and it made me question reality. And so some of the songs are very personal about that specific idea, and some of them are more stories again about the idea of what is reality. Once I'd done that, I suddenly felt like okay, I know I can write stories about other people. I can write, you know, I've written this album, which is essentially a breakup record, and I just felt like I wanted to really address my childhood. It almost a bit like, it's a cliche when people go for counselling. It's like, you know, what did your mother and father do to you when you were a child? You know, and I didn't consciously go into it thinking, right, I'm going to do this Memories of Childhood record. I was just in a place in my life where I was so much more comfortable with who I was. I think I'd perhaps, in between the second album and then writing this third album, started doing drag all the time and expressing myself that way, and just suddenly much more confident in who I was as a person, that I felt like, I can go there, I can look back at that and I can reflect on that and, you know, give that a go. And I'm so glad I did, because it almost now feels like, now I've done that, now I can do anything. You know, it's almost like a bit of a process with each album, you know, a bit of like a process as a writer, because I felt like I didn't know about songwriting when I was 18. And so it was a real learning experience, and it obviously continues to be. But yeah, I'm excited to now go on to doing something completely different.
Well, thank you so much. It's been really insightful. And we always finish this podcast off with the same question, which is, can you tell us something that you have read, listened to, or watched that has helped you gain an insight into a culture unfamiliar to your own?
Well, the most recent book I read is called Young Mungo by Douglas Stewart. He won the Booker Prize for his first novel, which was called Sugar Bane, which I actually haven't read. I started on his second book. Full transparency, I walked past Foyles and the book was two guys making out, and I was like, I want to read that. Judge a book by a book. That's what I say. And yes, okay, you asked, you know, like, is it a different culture to my own? You could say, well, you've read a book about gay people. The thing is, that book, it's set in 1980s. Was it 1980s? 1980s, I think.
Okay.
1980s, Glasgow. Very working class. addiction and violence, and it's, to be honest, it's something that I, very different to my youth. He was this young person discovering who he was. So he's a young teenager whose mother is an alcoholic, who basically goes on a camping trip with two of the people from the AA. His mother's met the AA and go on this camping trip, that'll make you a man. And it's really devastating, but it's also very beautiful. But I didn't know what it was like to grow up in a city or in a violent household, or you know, or any of these things. And it was a completely different outlook for me on what it was like to kind of grow up gay and in the city and in that environment. And it was the most beautiful book. It's one of the most beautiful books I've ever read. And I loved it. So I'm not sure if that totally answers your question, because it's kind of does, but it's definitely...
Well, it's a different time, it's a different culture, yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah. But that's, I only recently put it down. But, and I've now got the first book, Sugi Pain, which everyone's been telling me I've got to read as well. But I don't know anything about that. But, yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I've seen, watched, or done that's... There probably is, but I can't think now. But yeah. I recommend that book if you haven't read it anyway, because it's you don't have to be gay to read it. But it helps.
Yeah. No,
it doesn't. It's just really good.
Well, look, Douglas, thank you so much for having me over. It's genuinely been a pleasure. I could probably sit here for hours.
Well, we're going to put you in drag now, aren't we?
Well, you know what? Funnily enough, I was I did skip past it, but as you were talking about the process, all I could think about was experiencing it, and because it made me feel empowered to just think about going through the process and the experience. Oh, so you can hold me to it, not now unfortunately, because I do have to shoot.
Oh, but you're failing on me.
But I 100% would love to experience it. I think the way you describe the physicality change, it's not really something that I've experienced. The closest I've come to, I played Rocky in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, that's pretty close.
And that's the closest. But at the time I was young, and it was very much more about male bravado and trying to look good in hot pants than it was anything else. So I would love to, at some point, come round and we can get the bubbles out, spend 3 hours.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I'd love to. What a ride. And yes, you can hold me to a drag transformation with Douglas at some point in the near future. As always, the recommendations made will be in the description. Until next time.